Hello to our C. Jason readers across the world. I am the C. Jason editor-in-chief, Connie Ree, and joining us today are our deputy editors, Bob Roshan Raman and Sagar Nigokar. We are honored and delighted to have you join us in listening to this Editor's Choice podcast, in which we are highlighting three cutting-edge articles centered on the theme of chronic kidney disease published in our September C. Jason issue. These three articles include a study on frailty, multimorbidity, and polypharmacy, exploratory analyses of the effects of empagliflozin in CKD from the EMPA kidney trial led by Dr. William Harrington et al. Also, the effects of SGLT2 inhibitors on cause-specific cardiovascular death in patients with CKD, a meta-analysis of CKD progression trials led by Dr. Brandon Nguyen. And finally, a study on supporting self-management of healthy behaviors in chronic kidney disease and hypertension, the Smart Habits Pilot Randomized Trial led by Dr. Sarah Schrauben. I would like to kick us off by having Bob provide a synopsis of the first study.
Thank you, Connie. Frailty is a syndrome of physiologic vulnerability to stressors that was originally defined in the older adult population and has been associated with adverse health outcomes across multiple populations, including patients living with chronic kidney disease. Patients with CKD have substantially greater burden of frailty, and it has been linked to greater risk of hospitalization, progression to dialysis, and premature death. Frailty is also closely linked with polypharmacy, theoretically elevating the risk of complications from medications tested in clinical trials. Many studies have tried to assess whether frailty status modifies treatment effects. The current study is an exploratory post-hoc analysis of the EMPA kidney trial that aims to assess the risk-benefit of SGLT2 inhibition by frailty and its closely linked conditions of multimorbidity, polypharmacy, and healthcare-related quality of life. The study population included participants enrolled in the EMPA kidney study, which was a randomized controlled trial testing the effects of empagliflozin on a primary composite kidney outcome and secondary outcomes, which included hospitalization for heart failure or death from cardiovascular causes, hospitalization for any cause, and death from any cause. The main exposures were first frailty, which was defined by a categorization of a predicted risk of hospitalization determined for each individual from a statistical model. They did not use standardized definitions of frailty that were originally developed in larger cohort studies, however. The second exposure was multimorbidity, defined by self-reported conditions. Third was polypharmacy, defined as the number of concomitant medications at the baseline randomization visit. And the fourth was healthcare-related quality of life as measured using the EuroQol EQ-5D tool. The main results were first that frailty exposure that was created in this study was defined. In this particular study, seemed to capture 5-year risk of kidney failure and cardiovascular disease comorbidity. Those with greater frailty, on average, were also older, had greater BMI, and lower baseline eGFR. Median comorbidity in this population, excluding chronic kidney disease, was 1, and the median number of concomitant medications at baseline was 7. Adherence to the study treatment was found to be inversely correlated with frailty, with patients with greater frailty being more likely to discontinue treatments in both the SGLT2 inhibitor arm and the placebo groups. In terms of the primary outcome, there was no significant difference in relative benefit of SGLT2 inhibition by frailty, multimorbidity, polypharmacy, or healthcare-related quality of life. Similarly, in terms of the secondary outcome of all-cause hospitalization, there was no strong evidence for significant heterogeneity in treatment benefit by baseline levels of frailty, multimorbidity, and polypharmacy. However, there may have been some weak evidence that lower baseline healthcare-related quality of life may have attenuated the benefit of the treatment. In terms of safety events, including AKI, They were generally higher in those with frailty, polypharmacy, and multimorbidity, but there was no evidence that safety outcomes with treatment differed by the level of these factors, including any potential safety outcomes related to dehydration or fracture. Overall, the authors conclude that their findings encourage the use of indicated SGLT2 inhibition treatment in adults with CKD, irrespective of frailty, multimorbidity, or healthcare-related quality of life. Reassuringly, their study results are consistent with other clinical trials of SGLT2 inhibitors in patients with heart failure and also in the DAPA-CKD study, which used a standardized assessment of frailty. There are two limitations raised by the authors, however, that must be kept in mind when interpreting these results. First, clinical trials typically recruit healthier patients than the general population. And second, the definition of frailty used in this study was not externally validated. The former limitation should be kept in mind when interpreting results from any clinical trial and prompt closer attention when treatments are adapted to the broader population.
Thank you so much, Bob, for highlighting this important article. We're also excited to have our deputy editor, Sagar, speak on a similar theme of the role of SGLT2 inhibitors in CKD on an article titled The Effects of SGLT2 Inhibitors on Cause-Specific Cardiovascular Death in Patients with CKD, a Meta-Analysis of CKD Progression Trials. Thank you so much, Sagar.
Thank you, Dr. Ri, for inviting me to present this article in this month's podcast. So, as we all know, cardiovascular disease has a substantial burden of morbidity as well as mortality in individuals who suffer from chronic kidney disease. And there are very limited interventions thus far that have confirmed efficacy as well as safety to mitigate that burden of cardiovascular disease in patients with chronic kidney disease. Now, fortunately for the field, and especially for the patients with CKD, in the last few years, we have had a lot of new research and including approval of medications such as SGLT2 inhibitors for the indication of chronic kidney disease, both in the setting of diabetic chronic kidney disease as well as non-diabetic chronic kidney disease. And although number of clinical trials have demonstrated the efficacy of SGLT2 inhibitors in terms of various cardiovascular as well as non-cardiovascular endpoints in patients with CKD, the precise mechanisms and also whether there are differences on the impact of the individual cardiovascular events or deaths from those cardiovascular causes is relatively understudied. And that was precisely the focus of this rigorous meta-analysis that is being published in this month's issue of CJSN, which is led by Dr. Fletcher. And there are a number of authors from the original trials that are included in this meta-analysis. So, what did the authors do? So, they identified three randomized clinical trials, CREDENCE, which is canagliflozin and renal events in diabetes with established nephropathy clinical evaluation, DAPA-CKD, which is dapagliflozin and prevention of adverse outcomes in CKD, and EMPA-KIDNEY, which is the study of heart and kidney protection with empagliflozin. All of these trials did focus on enrolling patients with chronic kidney disease. And in these trials, patients were required to have been on the maximally tolerated or clinically appropriate doses of renin-angiotensin system blocking agents. And subsequently, they were, of course, randomized to receive either SGLT2 inhibitor or placebo. All the patients in these trials were closely followed for cardiovascular, kidney-related, as well as death-related outcomes. And these outcomes, importantly, were independently adjudicated by blinded endpoint committees according to the pre-specified criteria. And the cause for deaths in terms of whether it was related to heart failure or myocardial infarction or stroke or sudden cardiac death or some other undetermined or other cause of cardiovascular death was reported as part of these trials. So the authors collected data from these previously conducted trials. So this is, in that regard, a post hoc analysis of those data. And after pooling data from all of these trials, and these were, of course, very large trials with the total sample size that was exposed to the SGLT2 inhibitor group, approximately at around 7,500 patients were in that group. And in the placebo, in the comparator group, there were again equal number of patients when the data were pooled from all of these three trials. In combination, there were 523 cardiovascular deaths among these trial participants. And the authors not only looked at the overall cardiovascular death frequency as well as the differences between these two groups, which, of course, not surprisingly, as we know that these individual trials were favoring SGLT2 inhibitor over placebo. So the authors do report that if when they looked at any cardiovascular death, there was approximately 20% reduction in that risk of outcome. But perhaps I think, more importantly, and as the author's main focus here was to go into the specific cardiovascular events that are responsible for the death. So when the authors looked at death specifically due to heart failure, there was almost 60% reduction in that outcome. And when they looked at other causes, such as myocardial infarction or stroke or sudden cardiac death, for example, although there were no statistically significant differences between the SGLT2 versus the placebo, the point estimates were overall in favor of SGLT2 inhibitors, but nowhere close to the effect size that was seen with the outcome of death due to heart failure. So this suggests that maybe the main driver for benefit could be potentially through the protection of heart failure. Of course, though, there are a number of limitations to begin with. These are post hoc analysis of the previously conducted randomized controlled trials. And so the generalizability to an average person with CKD is at this point limited, and the findings should be considered as hypothesis generating. We also do not know whether the patients who died because of heart failure, how many of them had a known history of previous heart failure versus this being a new onset of heart failure. So these are some of the missing pieces at this point, which will, of course, require further investigation. But nevertheless, I found this research letter quite impactful in terms of giving us some early insights into the cause-specific protection from cardiovascular events in patients with CKD who are treated with SGLT2 inhibitors.
Thank you so much, Sagar. This is indeed an important article that we encourage our readership to study. I'm now going to share with you a publication focused on the topic of supporting self-management of healthy behaviors in chronic kidney disease and hypertension, the Smart Habits Pilot Randomized Trial. According to the authors, interventions that improve self-management are a critical cornerstone of slowing chronic kidney disease progression and improving overall morbidity and mortality in patients with kidney disease. Consequently, there has been growing interest in mobile health technologies such as smartphones, apps, and wearable devices that can provide an optimal approach to delivering self-management support since they are minimally burdensome, allow real-time assessments of health behaviors, and provide delivery of education and support out of the routine clinical setting. In this study, the authors describe their findings from an NIH-funded 12-week single-center pilot open-labeled, randomized controlled crossover trial conducted among adults with stage 3 to 4 CKD and hypertension. The overarching goal of their study was to examine the feasibility of smartphone-based interventions to support physical activity and blood pressure monitoring, deemed supporting self-management of healthy behaviors, smart habits for individuals with CKD and hypertension. Now, in this study, participants were asked to monitor their blood pressure at least 3 or more times per week and step counts at least 5 or more times per week. They were randomized to blood pressure communication approach, self-report via text messages for 6 weeks, or automatic reporting with a smartphone app paired to a Bluetooth-enabled blood pressure machine for the alternate 6 weeks. The approach to monitoring and reporting steps were the same during both phases. The study's primary outcomes were adoption, adherence to blood pressure and step count reporting, and acceptability as assessed by surveys and interviews. The secondary outcomes were reach, maintenance, CKD knowledge, digital health literacy, self-management, self-efficacy, quality of life, step counts, and blood pressure values. In terms of this investigator's main findings, in this pilot trial, they found that adults living with stages 3 or 4 CKD and hypertension adopted and adhered to smart habits with excellent acceptability, and nearly all participants completed the online surveys that served as patient-reported outcomes. And among these outcomes, CKD knowledge improved after 12 weeks. To provide more granular data, of the 47 randomized patients, 94% completed the text phase and 92% completed the app phase, and they had an overall retention of 91%. Blood pressure adherence was 87% in the text phase and 74% in the app phase, and step count adherence was 97%. The acceptability scores were high, and interviews largely conveyed acceptance. CKD knowledge was found to be increased, but survey scores did not change. However, mean step counts increased from the pre-study period similarly in both phases, but blood pressure did not change over time. The authors should be highly congratulated for their successful completion of this rigorous, innovative, and patient-centered trial showing that smart habits, as one of the very first smartphone-based self-management programs to support people with CKD and hypertension, promoted self-monitoring of blood pressure and physical activity. I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to dial in to hear more about these three high-impact research studies. This concludes our September CJSON podcast, and we look forward to connecting with you next time.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare professional if you have any questions about any medical condition or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.